Albert Coe's UFO contact in 1920. Parched report. Report from his book The Shocking Truth. Or also UFO contact from planet Norka, as Wendell Stevens published later. This following description will of course sound like a fairy tale, but think of how people 2000 years ago would describe the vessels of today. More inside the ship, an artificial living world or planet, our miniature world. Then he goes on with the ship's description. As you have calculated, the outer edge is just over 19 miles around, with the inner circumference 2 miles shorter, the intervening space taken up by various mechanism, and its revolving perimeter. It would be quite a hike to even cover the 24 sq miles of its lower level, where a variety of the more interesting experiments are being conducted, so we will utilize a transportation vehicle, and in leaving the central circular corridor, a descending ramp curves right to enter a 2,100-acre tract of scientifically designed farm and pasture land. Many tests are in progressive stages of control. The soil is complete with bacteria, animalcules and surface insects, both friend and foe to plant life, with only difference that if natural balance becomes offset by a predominant species, its proliferation is curtailed by electronic or chemical check on its ability to reproduce. To the left are fields of wheat, barley and corn, rows of squash, legumes, including types of soybean, potatoes and beetroot. To the right, pasture land and the golden brown cows grazing there are bred solely for milk production, and some smaller than your cows. The small animals grazing with them are antelope. The sheep in the next field are raised for their wool only. These magnificent animals are the pride of various branches of science, and the keenness of competition is intense, as they vie for the honors of showmanship and in racing. As you glance around, you will notice honeybees buzzing among the clover blossoms and in the flowers, bordering the two small streams that cut through the pasture. Along the ship's walls, in this area, are milking stations, research compounds, laboratories and equipment manufacturing facilities. Adjacent to the farmlands are 900 acres bushes, orchards of apple and plum, some in flower, others bearing fruit. The two streams continue through the orchard, fish. The artificial lighting effect produces identical benefit of light, heat and energy, as emitted by a native sun, to give a feeling of the true outdoors. And it is difficult to realize that you are traveling through space at the incredible velocity of 3,800 miles per second. There are also woodland producing the oxygen. Special trees similar to pines, cedars. Books go on describing this flying oasis, but enough of this now. Located here are also housing facilities for 2,200 families, theaters, athletic fields and archery ranges, all conforming in a motif of beauty that so symbolizes the race of mine. Underneath the ground or floor of this entire 16,000-acre lower level, is a water reservoir, and another in the topmost level of the ship. The intermediate levels house much of its mechanisms, manufacturing potentials, electronic doctoring center for physical malfunction, food and clothing distributing shops, etc. My ancient ancestors were wizards in electronic genius, and they worked out magnetic gravitational fields that float in one line of motion in relation to the ship's direction, and all entities synchronized or fixed in this stabilized field of equalizing pressure. Although it does not restrict our freedom of action, movement of any kind can only be achieved through motor impulse of the entity itself. Nedist S87. Although rather schematic, I believe this description tour will give you a workable knowledge of this ship of destiny, and a more understanding of the part that she and her later sister ships were to play in the salvation of the race. We should soon be nearing the end of her maiden voyage, so we'll return to the control room and watch the approach to Tau City and landing on Norka, just 10 years after takeoff on this XP. Flight. In looking at the last frame, you see this general view, and will notice that in this picture appears as a glowing ember, with rosy tongues of flame curling around its profile, and situated just below the center of this screen. The disc straight ahead, near the top of the frame, that looks in size like a shiny half dollar, is the seventh or outer planet Eureka, whose orbital aphelion is 829 mil. And the mean distance of the other six planets graduating down to 37 mil. For Ninika, the smaller and closest planet to the Sun. As you glance around this concentric group, these planets have appearance of seven small moons, shining in their darkened background. Arika directly behind, but above the Sun, is reflecting its light from her full face, and the others in various phases from 75% full, to half and crescents. These diff.conf. of each planet, are caused by an angle of approach, as the screen are depicting, reflected light. The scanner of the next screen is focused on Norka and the little fingers of flame, that appear in the upper right-hand corner of the frame, are from the arc of a tiny segment of Tau Ceti's photosphere, that the wide angle of the scanner's focal beam, has picked up. Norka's mean orbit is 85 mil. From the Sun, and is about 7 of 8 parts of the size of Earth, or 7,000 miles in diameter. We are still too far distant to reveal any surface detail, but the dazzling crescent, with its longer point curving around her top edge, is an awe-inspiring sight, and the very faint luminescence or aura that continues of her circumference does outline a sphere, this resulting to form the diffused glow of its ice fields. S91, if you watch very closely, you will occasionally see four flickers of light, beyond but following its curvature. These are the four moons of Norka, the larger and outer one, a natural moon, similar to your moon, and the other three are mechanical bodies, products of man's brain, that were designed to curtail evaporation, by retarding the fast-moving molecules that steal away as atmospheric gas, to stimulate moisture and temper the sharp differential of nighttime cold and heat of the day, that become part of a dying planet's physics, under duress of thinning atmosphere and escape of infrared light. It would be several hours before the ship veers down to the daylight side of Norka, her guidance system fixed on the beam of the landing field's beacons, so our visionary flight will speed through those intervening hours, and as we view the next screen, she will be gliding over the top of the North Pole of the planet, 60 miles above surface. The glare of the ice is quite intensive, but the horizontal curvature is very distinct, and in proceeding southward, our altitude and speed will gradually decrease, and objects start to take form. The dark mounds and spears are mountains jutting through glacial fields, the yellowish tinges mist, rising from melting ice sheets, for the planet is still basking under the influence of a warming trend, in this glaciation's era. Directly below us, now are edges of a receding frozen world, and you can see great cascades of pale greenish-yellow water tumbling down its sides, and gushing form beneath ice field and glacier. The interspersed black rolling waves, are storm clouds, pouring out their contingent, in torrential rail squalls, streams, lakes and shallow inland seas, are the main pattern of the landscape, but the green of vegetation, is becoming evident and then blends into the darker green of the forests. The belt is not too extensive, and within 400 miles, we will pass over its ragged borderline, that appears as short fingers and peninsula of fertile soil, with its plant life, protruding into the yellow-brown dust, sand and rock of desolate area that covers the entire ecdot zone, for it has long ago dehydrated. As we fly over this barren expanse, there is not a blade of grass, a tree or an animal and the only movement Gobi detected. The spasmodic swirl of dust clouds in this arid, lifeless desert. But look, our scanner is picking up hundreds of smaller craft, darting all around us, the first of a welcoming committee to honor this spectacular achievement. Our bearing is still due south, and above the shimmering heat waves and haze of dust particles, the low contours of a mountain range, will take shape, the northernmost extreme of Norka's southern hemisphere, and the ship is almost home. Wooded rolling hills stretch beneath us, but this band is also narrow for the ice fields are not far beyond, as they mass to southward, but adversity is not apparent here, in this summertime period of glacial epoch. Our ship angles sharply down and a large lake comes into view, fed by a river that winds through the floor of its picturesque valley. The face of a great white cliff looms ahead, and the valley opens to a sparkling jewel, in an eternal setting, The city of Norma, larger of the three remaining towns of my ancient race, and research center that created their symbol of hope, in guise of this wonderful craft. The ribbon-like lines that interlace the countryside, were in simple terminology, highways over which glide their wheel-less vehicles, cushioned on a magnetic field, and similar to the one that we used on our tour. Journey's end is minutes away, as we hover motionless, 700 feet above the surface of her enormous landing field, and you can see the buildings of the city terracing down the hillsides. Architecturally, their design white stone, peculiar to this valley. Their beauty enhanced with graceful curving arches, and splashing fountains, amid a profusion of flowers, each one decorated with banners and a colored streamers, in honor of this gala event. The ship slowly descends and just before touching down, a massive grid of electrodes, that honeycomb the landing field space, will discharge her buildup of static electricity, and radiation, flashing blue and incandescent white flames, race over her structure, to arc on the electrodes below, a necessary action to eliminate all potential of harmful effect. Ned's 92. Only then will Norca's population of 725,000 men, women and children rush out, from compounds of the field's vast perimeter, to welcome and pay homage to a ship, the branches of science and scientists, who resolve to dream of theory and diligence of research, into reality of successful test flight. In this detailed description, you are probably aware of a very highly advanced science and mastery of electronics that created these flying miniature worlds with intimately planned phases of pastoral simplicity, reverting to primal impetus that grouped primitive man into communities of brotherhood, such as pasture land and its grazing cattle, fields of grain, flowers, birds and woodland. But, in this apparent contradiction of opposites, you will find the great depth of wisdom, which underlie our philosophies, and was equalized a limitation of the brain, to maintain a rational balance of human characteristic under impact of an advancing science that south to parry and survive a dying planet. My ancient forebears, fully realized that unborn generations to come, conceived in this privation of adversity, that may last for thousands of years, and to be compressed in a world of chemistry, bounded by lifeless metallic walls of a ship, could only evolve as automatons, a race of human robots unable to know the value of love or even contemplation, in beauty, of their origin, if they had never seen a flower in bloom, a tree to grow, heard a song of a bird, or watched the freedom of an animal movements. The human brain is a marvel of the universe, but it is also an extremely susceptible entity. And now, said Zrit, like a mean old witch waving a magic wand, we are back in a drifting canoe, on the Hudson 20,000 years later. These meetings, the dinners and the trips, are typical of countless, that grew into years, and through Zrit's patience, the deep sincerity of friendship and guidance of wisdom. More ref. Of Zrit's story, from ch.6, transmigration of solar systems, or evacuation of a dying planet. Less than a century passed, after the flight of our Norca ship, when the fickle summertime period of an ice age ended. With a return of its extreme cold, the receding glaciers once again started to advance, and although not as massive as those on Earth, due to far less plentiful water distribution, they did rob a considerable amount from the shallow seas, lakes and rivers, which in many instances, were completely frozen and remained in this solidified state for several hundred of years. Atmospheric thinning continued to add its complications, and when the permanent warming trend finally arrived, they watched their planet slowly die, for during the next 5,000 years, the sun evaporated an unequal percentage of water and melting ice, that returned an unequal percentage of water and melting ice, that returned in the form of runoff, and in rain and snow patterns. The people of Norca made a valiant effort, employing every scientific tool at their command, but could not retard this vapor drain off for the sun's heat radiation, resulting in an ever-increasing speed-up of escape electrons in air and water molecules. The ice caps eventually dwindled away, later followed by the remaining water of river, lake and sea. The fertile lands dried up and deteriorated to the dust, sand and stone of relentlessly expanding Great Central Desert. All plant life of former sea and soil withered away, and without this basic source of atmospheric oxygen and food supply, the animal kingdoms and vanishing with them was man's waning hope to stem the inexorable forces that strip an aging planet of its living mantle. Only one avenue from total extinction remained open: evacuation, and the last years of habitation, in a native environment, was rather a frugal existence that they endured, living between their remarkable ships and the surface of this dying world, as they studied, calculated and plotted a course to a contemporary solar system. This study and its evaluation were painstakingly through, as there was little tolerable allowance for error and decision of choice restricted to the elements of velocity, time and distance, for contact with a water-bearing planet. Velocity of the vehicles well established, in continuous flight, at 38,000 mps, and travel distance limited by a time span of 65 years, the exhaustion point of chemical and water supply capacities, through their reprocessing systems, in sustaining a complement of selected animals, plants and 243,000 men, women and children, the remaining representation of a once mighty nation, who through so many thousands of years of natural adversity, had been forced to counterbalance their population in a strict practice of birth control. The star which they called Nirunth, our sun, was situated within this time-space radius from Tau City, and all electronic probes confirmed that at least two of its indicated planets were water-bearing, and compatible to the materialization of matter in compounds, from which they had evolved. After the electronic verification of computed calculation, a momentous decision to direct their path of flight to this solar system was unanimously acclaimed. In a touching ceremony of farewell, a brief history of their nation, with date and intended destination of migration, was inscribed upon the white cliff's face that once loaned its beauty to the side of a verdant valley, only now to stand stark and naked against a blazing sky. But each person filing past, knelt to kiss the base of this stone, in a heartbreaking gesture to an origin of birth, their faces bathed in unashamed tears, as they made their way to allotted locations, in the 62 ships of the fleet. Ned S-96, each one of the 40 passenger ships, a sister and replica of the Norka ship, housing 4,100 people, and several hundred animals of the bovine, cattle, horse, sheep, antelope, dog and cat families, 15 species of bird life, plus many genera of plants and insects on their scientifically engineered farms. The 22 transport ships were laid out in similar smaller pattern, to complement a .1770 men and women, who are the technicians in charge of the major portion of all materials, machines, electronic devices, laboratory and research instruments, etc., stowed on these ships, and so a determined civilization, started its fantastic journey, to a hoped-for haven, that promised the last and only salvation of their race. The main duration of flight, which lasted 58 years and 7 months, brought them to the fringe influences of our solar system, and was quite uneventful, without too great a change from the mode of existence they had experienced, and became accustomed to, in those last years of proximity to their native planet, except an understandable apprehension regarding the ultimate goal. But with this goal in sight, and their hopes keyed to the exhilaration of victory, disaster did strike, for the opposing polarities of their ships, of the electronic devices and guidance systems, that had served so well, and accurately over these many millions of miles, was apparent impetus that terminated an epic flight in a horrible holocaust. This miscalculation never was fully confirmed. The sun apparently acted as a gigantic magnet, and they were powerless to fully check the tremendous velocities, as their ships fell uncontrollable into its fiery mass. Three planets were in the general line of fall, and at least two of the plummeting ships hit Jupiter and was never heard of again. One crashed on Mars, and another into Venus, where fragments were later found. Through some miracle of destiny, the original XPDOT ship intersected the path of Mars and did not burn up, explode or shatter on impact, but ricocheted and after several decreasing orbits of this planet, skipped across the sand, dust and hummocks of its surface, to finally partially bury itself in a large hill that split wide open, to only demolish the leading edge, as the most incomprehensible event of all, enabled the survival of 3,700 of its occupants. After recovery from the shock stress that terminated this journey of hope, caring for the injured, both animal and human, and cremation of the dead, repeated attempts to communicate with other craft of the fleet, resulted in negative response, as they prepared for tentative probes of this strange planet, on which they were now marooned, and at first glance did not seem much more hospitable than the homeland they had fled. The atmosphere was quite thin, with pressure a fraction under 6 pounds per square inch at mean surface level, resolving in moderately temperate days and cold nights, but a widening scope of exploration revealed they had landed on one of the extensive deserts of its sector zone, and there was water, not overly abundant, with higher atmosphere pressure both to the north and to the south, with some plant and small animal life, predominated by the rodent and reptile families, a few species of fish, and millions of insects, but no trace of humanoid form. There were also shallow ice caps at the poles, as reservoirs to be tapped into through engineering tech. The planet did not appear in an exact category of embracing extinction, but rather in the essence of marking time in an arrest from natural deterioration. The span duration that it would remain in this state could not be immediately determined, but at best, it promised no paradise. So ends the story of the valiant flight of my venerable ancestors as a pitiful remnant renewed a struggle to retain its grasp on a spark of life, with scarcely the rudiments of existence at their command. Ned 99, much of the following is out of the letters he sent to Albert where he told more details of different things. From CH 7, The Survivors, the first decade in this strange environment was a precarious period. Their great ship lay crippled and beyond repair, yet a haven of shelter, with some of its life-sustaining functions still intact, but the transports with their precious cargoes of much-needed material, machinery, electronic devices, lab.tech and the personnel of these many sciences, destroyed or beyond the pale of now curtailed com. System. Every phase of this incredible incidence was an interlinking of the irony of fate with the whimsical caprices of luck. The complement of this ship of destiny were, in major part, scientists of agricultural field, and its associated branches of agrology, animal husbandry, etc., with only a minor percentage of engineers, health specialists and physicists. But again, the knowledge of all this group of naturalists and the experience of long years of adversity, on their homeland, was the basic nucleus that overcame the hostile conditions of this unique planet. Centuries before, the concentrated studies of plant life and soil, by this science, had disclosed that the requisites of existence may be coaxed from most barren locale, and the knowledge of this exalting research once more put to good use, for it had also revealed how trees and plants live out complete cycle, minus a nervous system, breathe without benefit of gills, lung or the presence of oxygen, circulate sap, their lifeblood, without a heart or other distinct pumping mechanism, and the intricate method of combining electronics, hydrolysis, chemistry and energy, through which they convert lifeless inorganic elements into compound foods, that are the basis sustenance of all evolving animate form. They had also originated complex compounds, derived from insect and bacteriological sources that contain tremendous protein and mineral value, when used as a food supplement. Our educational curriculum has always comprised an elementary term of 22 years, in which all of our known sciences are studied, and a final 5-year term or major in the science are studied, and a final 5-year term or major in the science that the student has shown a more comprehensive aptitude during the elementary term. With this general knowledge of their earlier schooling, a scanty population was welded into a previous national structure of 56 sciences, as they endeavored to recapture a way of life, under philosophies of love and beauty. It was just over 1,000 years later, than these scientists, of a growing nation, had unraveled the mysteries of this solar system's magnetic fields, its energy potential and velocity power sources. They then proceed to design and construct the ship that were used to harness this power, as they launch twin expeditions of exploration to the neighboring planets of Venus and Earth. The success of these missions would guarantee a security to life, if their planet became untreatable, and to perhaps fulfill a dream, in their unrelenting search for a more compatible environment, in which to expand their studies, and to fully enjoy the benefit that this knowledge and its application in a refinement of nature may bestow. Author's note: I feel it necessity of inserting an excerpt from the 4-dot letter of 6 which they sent me during the past 11 years. It not only gives insight as to the tremendous wealth of history, knowledge and philosophy which these letters contain, but the text of this spec-dot excerpt as translated and adapted to our understanding by these strangers, is taken from the ancient archives and flight log of this original exploration of our planet, more than 1,300 years age. I believe that this passage, written in the words of these intrepid explorers, is far more impressive than any that I may coin. Excerpt from letter dated May 31, 1962. The following narrative is taken from our record and as space requisites of a letter, limit complete elucidation and detail, an epitome of generalities, will be employed in a succession of occurring events, and in the main, in present tense, as a picture unfolding. Familiar terms will be used. We have come to conclusion that our planet is slowly dying, and although there is no imminent danger, we do know that at some point, in the foreseeable millenniums of the future, it will become incapable of sustaining life, if allowed to deteriorate in its natural cycle, and consequence are working on 4 tremendous projects. A method to nudge the planet a little closer to the sun, this a questionable undertaking for the calculated effect that an unnatural motion of this mass, in a third directional velocity, may have on it and on neighboring planets, is difficult to determine, with the possibility of upsetting the very delicate balance of opposing force, which constitutes the life and behavior of all planets. A method of temperature moderation, a method of increasing water supply, a craft for interplanetary travel with the verification of a great deal of our calculation dependent on physical check, through this project, and also a guarantee of survival should conditions ever warrant a mass evacuation. The basis of this narrative will concern a part of the latter project, and its initial objective, the exploration of the twin planets, Earth and Venus, which for so many years have been studied through visual observation. At last this great moment has arrived. Several reconnaissance flights have been completed, test made for radiation of the atmosphere, and the general evaluation of the environment, which we may encounter, for life on both planets appear primitive, as there is no visible evidence of cities or other form and order, which indicate civilized man. 2 expeditions are ready for takeoff, each with a separate objective, but of the same intent, the landing for scientific research on alien planets. Our paraphernalia has been stowed with many bundles of food, clothing, utensils, implements and ornaments to be used as gifts should we meet fellow man, so our journey begins. 15 men and their wives, whining into vast unknown, for all except the 4 who had blazed the test flight trails, with the hope and dreams of our people ever with us. A great joy fills the hearts of all in a pride of achievement. Our destination, the blue-tinted sphere, Earth. The insignia on our banner, Anna, a star. For 497 hours we voyage, as the awe-inspiring panorama of our solar system unfolds, but ever blending with the unfathomed mysteries of the universe, whose stars dazzle, bewitch and lure as the hidden fire of diamonds in the black velvet setting. The blazing sun is our constant companion. The dot on our scanners increasing as each hour flies by, until we hover over a shimmering jewel of fleecy clouds, sparkling water and green vegetation. We drop lower, the earth pattern with landlocked seas, lakes and rivers stand out, mountains take shape. Some indicate volcanic action, great soil-rooted forests become distinguishable from fern and swamp vegetation, as we make several circles of the planet, in general observation. In many of the open areas, we note man-like figures, scurrying for cover at each, We drop a few of our gift bundles.